You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 216 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 1027, Detective Comics 1031, Justice League Dark number 28, Legion of Superheroes number 11, The Flash number 766, Wonder Woman number 767, Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Multiverse Who Laughs number 1, Batman White Knight Presents Harley Quinn number 2, The Other History of the DC Universe number 1, and of course Watchmen, Season 1 Episode 9, See How They Fly. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News. Titans Season 3 reveals Starfire's proper superhero costume. And I got to tell you, it looks a lot better than what she was wearing before.
Well, I mean, before she was just wearing clothes that were like reminiscent of her costume. You know, I wouldn't really call it a costume. It was really just street clothes that reminded you of her normal wardrobe, which were fine. I'm surprised that she didn't have some sort of suit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just odd, given how incredibly accurate their costumes were for all these other characters. It was weird that they kept doing streetwear for her.
Yeah. And I noticed her hair it looks normal. Not her normal color, but the actress's normal color. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I really don't care about the hair, to be honest. I know a lot of people I'm talking like the original thing. Like, a lot of people were really up in arms, like, oh, it's not Starfire. She doesn't have the orange hair. I was like, what? I don't care. To me, that is not a defining characteristic of the character, to me, personally. Yes, I know that that's how she's drawn in the comic. I know that. But, like, I feel like there are more important things to get right than that.
I agree with you on that.
I mean, for example, Grant Gustin doesn't have blonde hair. Barry Allen has always been a blonde. And I don't think any of us have ever really had a problem with the fact that he's not a blonde.
No, I've never had any problem with it. All right, up next for our DC News, Legends Tomorrow casts Nick Bishop in Doctor Strangelove homage for Season 6.
I'm curious to see what that episode's going to look like. I'd be lying if I said I cared even a little bit about the casting itself. I don't. But I'm really curious what that episode looks like. That sounds like that could be a pretty fun episode.
It does, doesn't it? All right, up next for DC News, The Flash pauses production after a team member working on the CW series has tested positive for COVID-19. That's a bummer.
That's not the last time that's going to happen. Maybe if the Flash doesn't get shut down again, but another one will.
Oh, yeah. We knew it was going to happen. We talked about that before. So, not surprised to see it's going to happen. They'll shut down, and in a couple weeks, they'll be back in production again. So, it may affect episodes when episodes come out, but it'll eventually come out. All right. Up next for DC News, David Ramsey, a.k.a. John Diggle, will return to direct 5 episodes in the Arrowverse. He will also guest star in Superman and Lois, Supergirl, The Flash, and Batwoman. In DC Legends of Tomorrow, he will be portraying a mystery role, which, my big guess is, it might be Green Lantern.
They definitely want you to think it's Green Lantern. I wonder if it's not, and they just like they want to like convince you to maybe watch the show if you don't already watch Legends, which you should. It's the funniest show of the group. And then it's just he's just like playing like an alternate version of Diggle.
That's possible. But
don't you feel like it's just I know they teased the Green Lantern thing, but they've been teasing Green Lantern for the entirety of the Arrowverse.
That's very true. But I'm hopeful because we know Legends is going to be dealing with space this season, so
that's true. Well, and also it seems more likely that he'd actually be playing Green Lantern because A, they finally actually showed something. It was barely anything, but they did show something. And then it would make sense for a character like that to pop up in other shows. You know what I mean? Like, if the way it looks like they're going to be using him across the shows, that would make sense if you're going to be Green Lantern. Like, that would make sense to use him that way.
Yeah, it would. I hope. I'm hoping, but we'll see what happens.
I've been hurt too many times, Drew. I just don't trust it.
The only problem is, if they're going to do him as Green Lantern, we're not going to see him use his abilities that much because of special effects. So,
yeah,
it'll be costly. So, we may get a generic Green Lantern, but we'll see. All right, in other DC news, China Ann McClain says she was planning a Black Lightning exit before the cancellation. The actress who plays Jennifer Pierce, Lightning, on the superhero show shared the news in an emotional video posted on her Instagram. She also said she didn't know about the cancellation beforehand and found out with everybody else. The actress also implied she was fed up with Hollywood, saying, "All this is an illusion. This industry for what it is and everything that people look to and praise is not important." So we were wondering, I think, were we talking about this last week?
Yeah, I suspect that she may not be the only one that was looking to get off the show. I have no facts to back that up, but I suspected that last week when we talked about this, when we talked that the show was ending, seemingly out of nowhere. And I was like, I bet you some cast members wanted off, and lo and behold, at least one of the girls, who in my opinion were more important to the show than Black Lightning himself. I don't know. I was not shocked by this news just because that's kind of the feeling that I had. I was like, I bet there's some main cast members that are wanting off.
Yeah. I'm wondering if any of the others are going to say anything or if this is going to be the only one we hear about.
And it could be, I'll admit, I could be wrong. This doesn't necessarily prove anything. It lends credence to my theory that there was because the thing to me that suggested that it was an actor thing is because the showrunner is sticking around. And typically, he wouldn't be doing that if it was his decision to end it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And if it was the network, if the network didn't like Black Lightning as a show anymore, I don't think they'd turn around and give the guy a new show either. So it's just everything about it to me suggests that it was the actors were done with the show, which is fine. That's entirely their right. But that's why we're seeing the end of the show.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you on that. All right, and for our last bit of news, coming out of Dark Knight's Death Metal, DC Future State will take you on a journey from the near future to the end of time to witness the destinies of heroes like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the Justice League, Teen Titans, and more. In January and February, over the course of 25 miniseries, most of which will run 2 issues to tell their tales. So, did you check out that DC Nation, DC Future State preview?
I did. I had several thoughts on it. The first one that I wanted to talk about was they highlighted some of the new creators that they have coming on to do most of these books. And the thing, I don't know if you noticed this, Drew, is there was not a lot of comic book writing experience with that group. Yes, they were writers. I'm not going to say that they've never written stuff before, that they're bad writers. But there's a difference between writing for a TV show, writing a book, and writing a comic. It's a different skill set. You're writing for a different medium. But we know that they're rolling back the budget. And when you roll back the budget, to me, that's the kind of writing talent that you get. That's just my opinion.
Yep, and I kind of have to agree with you. Yeah, I noticed that too. So we will see.
I'm not saying that they can't be good. And there were certainly, there was at least, I saw one of the, there was at least, I think, two female writers that had done several comics before, which is great. But like almost all of the guys, I think, had little to no comic book experience. And that could work out, but it also could not work out. So I feel more likely that it's that one, but we'll see.
One of the things that surprised me was the 25 miniseries and only being two issues to tell their tale. I thought that was kind of interesting.
What I'm curious with this, Drew, is how much of these are ultimately like short stories, which I think is the right way to do it based on what this event feels like it's supposed to be. And how many of these are going to end up being like teases for future story, in which case I think this event's going to blow. Because nobody wants to read that. I don't want to read two issues that doesn't really resolve or do anything. I think best case scenario, this event is somehow weirdly them trying to give you a like, hey, what about what's the end of Superman's story look like? I know I'm not saying necessarily that's what this is, but like, let's flash forward. We're into the future. What's Superman's story look like here? And it's just a two issue short story on Superman. I'm okay with that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
If it's a two issue story that teases the next coming year for Superman, like what the hell? Just do the normal comic.
Now I saw that for the Superman one, it sounded like Clark was going to be leaving Earth and was going to be some sort of gladiator on War World or something, and that John was going to be taking his place. So that was going to be an interesting dynamic, and it sounded like John was going to be a different kind of Superman, because it sounded like he was going to shrink down Metropolis to keep it safe or something, and Supergirl was going to have an issue with it. At least that's what I got from it. The other thing
I am not a fan. I know he's supposed to be a gladiator, but good Lord, that is just the worst. That is like the exact kind of costume that is somebody trying too hard to make Superman cool, and you just end up where the only thing he's wearing, and they highlight this, like they actually wrote it out, Drew, to draw your attention to it. They're like, notice that he only has his logo and shorts on. Like, that's not a good thing. That's not a selling point, DC. That's stupid.
For the Batman storyline, it sounded like the guy who's running for mayor right now that wants to get rid of vigilantes, it sounds like he becomes mayor. Bruce either retires or something happens to him, and there's some sort of new Batman who's wearing a full face cowl. That's supposed to be the big mystery, is who is this Batman? I can't remember what was going on with Wonder Woman. But the trilogy, they're supposed to be taken off the board and people are going to be taking their places. And some of the other titles, I don't remember what they were going to do with, but, you know, it's enough to catch your interest to see what's going to happen. But whether they're going to be good stories or not remains to be seen.
I remain unconvinced that this isn't the new 52, but less permanent. This feels like exactly what they did with the new 52 in regards to they like completely redesign everybody's costume. They completely changed the status quo. In new 52, they de-aged everybody and modernized the setting. Except the difference was new 52 was just the new status quo. That was just the universe now. This future state seems like it's basically that, which I cannot remind you enough, Drew. It didn't work. The new 52 didn't work. Even if there were some good ideas along with it, ultimately it clearly was not a successful strategy. And it feels like DC is running it back, which is baffling to me.
New suits are in charge, Cletus.
it's one of those things where you can tell that they're clearly trying to treat this when a sports team gets a new jersey. Or something where they're just like trying to update and they think that that will draw in new people, which it might draw in a few, but
But this is the problem that both Marvel and DC have had. They keep screwing themselves by every time you just reset the button, you just keep hitting reset and be like, ooh, look, new flashy thing, reset, new flashy thing. You just start losing people because people are like, well, I mean, why am I going to keep reading? None of these stories end up meaning anything.
Yeah, that's the problem. We'll have to see where these go. I mean, they've said this is supposed to be like a temporary event, and then we're supposed to be going back to normal. But I have a
But
feeling
then what's
normal
the
is not
point?
going to look like our normal.
I agree with that, but then also if it, let's take them at their word that it is basically just like an event. A, why the hell are you doing an event in January? And then, what's the point of this? We've been do we haven't stopped doing an event. We've been in the midst of this year of the villain transitioning into this death metal and then transitioning into endless winter slash future state. When are we going to just stop and just tell their own stories?
I
Like,
hope
again,
soon.
this is, it's not just us, Drew. It's not like it's just you and I screaming into the wind. This, I feel like most comics people think that they are hurting themselves with event after event after event after event, and then they just keep doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you. They just keep doing event after event after event, and it's getting old. I just want to have regular stories again. And with all these big crossover events, I like events like Batman having his own events, or Flash having their own events, or Superman without crossing over all the time too. I mean, that's how it used to be. You'd have you'd have the normal stories going on, and then all of a sudden you'd have like a big Batman event where, the main focus was like the Joker was doing something or something like that. But I don't know. All these big events are getting old.
When it makes it really hard for only for any book to do its own thing because they all like inevitably when you just when it's just wall to wall events, inevitably one of them is going to end up affecting the status quo of your title somehow. It just makes it so hard for any of these creators to try and do something interesting or long term with their own stories because I mean you don't know. You might only get 2 issues in and all of a sudden you've got to have your character do something completely different.
Yep. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Great things are coming on the Nerd Bliss podcast. We're changing up our presentation while keeping the candidness that you enjoy. We'll cover all your favorite shows and movies with maybe a few surprises along the way. And you, yes, you will have opportunities to be on our show on a regular basis. That's right. We've got the Zoom Pro account and we're going to use it. So be ready. Find us at nerdblisspodcast.com and esonetwork.com and on all the socials at nerdblisspod. Nerd Bliss. Listen up.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers. For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics 1027. So the issue opens up with Lois Lane in FBI custody. Special Agent Chase asks Lois where she was from. Lois doesn't answer, but Agent Chase states that Lois physically attacked Ms. Leone in front of federal officers. Now, I was going to ask you about this, Cletus, because I remember being confused last issue with Lois's arrest. And I went back to that issue and I saw no indication of a physical attack in the artwork or the dialogue. And it looks like Jimmy was even holding Lois back while she was yelling. I was curious what your thoughts on that were.
Well, I'm really glad, Drew, that you actually went back and looked at that because when I read that, I was like, I do not remember her going after Leon like that. It just must have been long enough I don't remember. So I'm glad that you went and checked that because I didn't remember that either.
No, I was when I read that, I'm like, no, she didn't. And I was like, I'm going back and looking. Nope, it did not happen. So I was like, what are they talking about? I look back at the artwork, you know, she was yelling at her, but Jimmy was like holding her back and there was no physical interaction. So I don't know how they can say that. Now, Lois's lawyer, Kate Spencer, shows up and Lois Lane is let go because the FBI is not charging her with anything. It's because she didn't do nothing. Supergirl rescues Superman from the Red Cloud, while John and Connor keep the Red Cloud busy circling her at super speed. Brainiac 5 teleports them to the Phantom Zone, where Superman gives the Red Cloud a choice. She can stay in the Phantom Zone, or she can go back to an Earth prison. Also, we learn that the Red Cloud got her powers from Star Labs. We find out that Ms. Leon escaped to another universe. Brainiac 5 hints to Supergirl that she'll be coming to the future for some event. And then, at the end of the issue, we find out that Jimmy Olsen is now the owner of the Daily Planet. One thing I thought that was weird about the Jimmy Olsen owning the Daily Planet, the comic was trying to make it sound like it was going to be a disaster or something.
I mean, Jimmy Olsen owns the Daily Planet. How could it not end in disaster?
Okay, well, if you want to go back to the, you know, going back to the miniseries of Jimmy Olsen being goofy, yeah, I can see that. But we haven't really seen Jimmy Olsen being goofy in the normal main title, I didn't think.
That's true, but this suggests what we were very unsure about when we talked about that title was whether this was just Jimmy's own story or whether it really was supposed to be the current Superman status quo. Apparently, yes, it was just 3 months ahead or something like that.
Yeah, that didn't jive very well, did it?
I mean, that's been pretty typical for Bendis's books, though. They've been way behind the ball.
That's true.
The time everybody else is establishing. So
the only thing I got.
So in that case, we assume it is that Jimmy. So
I got to tell you, I told you so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Detective Comics 1031. The issue opens up with the Mirror coming to Nakano and offering to help him win the election. Nakano refuses, stating he'd rather lose than win that way. On the streets of Gotham, we are seeing the battle of ideals. People that are against the mask and people that are for the mask. And a big fight breaks out and the Bat family try to break it up. And then we see someone in the crowd start shooting the different members of the Bat family. Now, while the Bat family is dealing with the crowd, Batman confronts the Mirror himself. The Mirror gets away from Batman, and he jumps towards the river and then explodes, trying to make a martyr of himself. We uncharacteristically see Batman give a speech to the crowd about how he and the Bat family are victims of corrupt institutions and how they're trying to prevent that from happening to others. Then we see, towards the end of the issue, that Nightwing tells Batman the Bat family can handle things here and to go after Robin. In reality, Hush was the one in the Batman mask in the crowd putting the Bat family down with knockout darts, I'm assuming, and he's captured them all. Were you surprised to see Hush in this?
Yeah, honestly, very surprised. Even though they hinted at Hush with the detective apparently being, like, his cousin? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, something. Oh yeah, that's right. The detective was his cousin. I forgot about that until you mentioned it.
So even though they put that in there, so they like made you think of Hush, I still didn't think that he'd be involved in the story. So I'm pretty intrigued by this. This was a pretty good issue, honestly. I thought a little bit more focused, just much better at building a mystery, which is, I mean, something Detective Comics has very much struggled to do. I think the key with detective work, obviously we want to see him be a detective, but also a lot that can go with that is making a good mystery in the first place. Like if it's just Batman being a detective by like following a blood trail to the guy that's bleeding, I mean, that's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a difference there.
What I had a hard time with this issue wasn't the fact that Hush captured the Bat family. It was that he captured the whole Bat family. I mean, I could see how it could sneak up on him in the crowd, but I was like, he captured the whole Bat family except for Batman? I said, that's kind of hard to believe, but also, yeah, it could happen. I had to stretch my sense of disbelief. You know what I mean? Sense of disbelief on that one, of capturing the whole Bat family.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, but other than that, I thought it was a good story, so... And I'm interested to see what is Hush's plan. So that's the big mystery to me in this one. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Dark number 28. So the issue opens up with Zatanna merging herself with the Upside Down Man. We see there is a battle of wills, and it looks like the Upside Down Man beat her and destroyed her form. The Upside Down Man begins to attack Wonder Woman and the other members of the Justice League Dark. Wonder Woman tells the Upside Down Man that Zatanna hasn't been beat yet. He's still standing the right way up. And suddenly, Zatanna pulls a memory of a stage performance, and the Upside Down Man seems to perform it in real life. Zatanna has the Upside Down Man bring a rabbit back to life, which cost them their lives. We see Wonder Woman uses Hectate's magic to bring balance. Detective Chimp reopens the Oblivion Bar. He tells Khalid that when Diana used Hectate's magic to seal away the Upside Down Man, it was like witnessing a collision of opposites, like matter and antimatter coming together. We also see Zatanna's father sacrifice himself to bring John Constantine back. We also learn that Khalid is unable to talk to Naboo or tap into the powers of the helmet. And at the end of the issue, we see a mysterious old man turn into a bunch of crows, and we're told the Justice League Dark continues in endless winter. Sometimes my summaries don't capture the comic story. You know what I mean? Because sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to sum some of these stories up. But this was really a good wrap up to the Upside Down Man, I thought.
Oh, I thought it was a phenomenal ending to the comic. I mean, really. I mean, this run that we got was so good. I mean, it's just a really good run of a beginning to end story about a magic DC team taking on this creature. Obviously, there's stops along the way that we got, but ultimately that was the whole story, was them versus the Upside Down Man. And I thought the conclusion was incredibly satisfying. It was not something where oftentimes you can get an end of the story where the hero beats the villain so easily that you're like, what the hell were the first four issues for? Or Flash, what the hell were the first 19 episodes for? But that didn't feel like, this felt so earned. They had to do everything, and every part of the story that led up to this mattered. Like everything that like Wonder Woman and Hecate, that part mattered, and all of these other parts of the story, all of that built up to this incredible effort by the team in order to overcome what was seemingly an impossible foe. It's great. It's a great ending to this story. I'm just hopeful that, I don't know that this is the same creative team that we're getting following the end of Future State.
Yeah, I don't know either. And one of the things I did like about the story is it wasn't easy to beat the Upside Down Man, and there was consequences. We saw that we had lost John Constantine, but because of Zatanna's father sacrificing himself, brought John back for Zatanna. We saw that Khalid, he's not able to talk to Naboo or tap into the powers of the helmet. I'm curious to see where that story is going to go after that. I mean, is he done being Dr. Fate? Is somebody else going to take the helmet? Or are we going to see him struggling to tap into those powers once again? Is he going to have a journey with that? So, you know, things like that. That's very interesting. The end of the issue just felt weird. I mean, the old man turning into a bunch of crows and telling us the story continues in endless winter. That wasn't a very good tease, I didn't think. It didn't really get me excited for endless winter.
I won't blame the creative team on this, though. I guarantee you they did not have the choice in that. Because I agree. I mean, it has nothing to do with the story at all. But there's no way they chose to put that at the end of that story.
Yeah, and I don't think it needed to be there at all. All right.
No, because I think it sets an undue expectation that Endless Winter is a Justice League Dark story. I don't think it is. And what you're implying to readers is like, hey, you really liked this story? Well, it's over. Tough shit. go read Endless Winter, and I don't think they're going to get the same story from Endless Winter. So that's I think they're setting themselves up for disappointment with that.
Yeah. Well, it's not the only title that did that, too. And I'll complain about that when we get there. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Legion of Superheroes number 11. The issue opens up with Mon-El telling us that he is a descendant of Superman and Lois, and of course, John Kent. He tells us he quit the Legion because he was confused, but it was obvious he was jealous. Mon-El also tells us he petitioned the Legion to call him Superman, but they said he hadn't earned it yet. Some of the Legion have come to New Krypton to convince Mon-El to rejoin the Legion, and the Legionnaires are attacked by some unknown foe. On Xanthu, Superboy, Irma, and Dr. Fate investigate Mordru. They find Superman's original cape, and suddenly Dr. Fate disintegrates. On Rimbar, Ultra Boy accepts the Council's decision to appoint him as planet leader. And as planet leader, Ultra Boy decides to dismantle the War Council and call for free and fair elections on all of Rimbar. On Earth, Triplicate Girl comes to Dream Girl with questions about the dreams she's had of Mordru. On Daxam, we learn that Rose Thorne is 1,000 years old. While Rose is talking, Mordru shows up and kidnaps Cosmic Boy. Then at the end of the issue, we see John Kent flies to New Krypton with Irma and discovers Rogel Zar. There was a lot going on in this issue, and I actually had to read it twice to keep track of what was going on in this issue.
Yeah, I think the first thing that I want to talk about was I don't know about you, Drew, but I was extremely off-put by how quippy Mordru was. This is personal taste. It reminded me of the version of Ultron we got in the Avengers movies and how extremely unlike Ultron in the comics he is. That's what Mordru felt like to me, where Bendis was trying to get too cute with like, look how snappy and witty he is. Like, yeah, but now I don't take him seriously as a villain.
I didn't get that from Mordru just because there was so much going on, I didn't really focus on Mordru that much. His appearance felt out of place to me. It's just like he just popped up all of a sudden. And he didn't feel like he really did anything. They told us he took Cosmic Boy, but I don't remember really seeing it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I didn't think they did a good job with Mordru.
No, I mean, yeah, I agree. They did not. I didn't like it at all. They've been building this up as this incredible villain, this incredible huge menace. And I agree. I didn't really see him kidnap one of the Legionnaires. And then he just basically shows like, that was pretty easy. Anyway, see you guys. And it was like, what? This incredible huge menace is just cracking jokes? Come on, Bendis. I'm not saying that you can't do that, but he doesn't fit what I thought was the kind of story that Bendis was trying to write, if that makes sense. Like, if that was the big bad villain in Wonder Twins, yeah, okay, that totally fits that book. That makes sense. But not with the threat, like, not when you're trying to do Rogel freaking Zar in the same book, and then you turn around and have the threat that's supposed to be bigger than him be like, hey, I'm kind of funny, right, guys? Finger guns, see ya.
And the thing was, Rogel Zar felt more of a menace than Mordru. That was another issue I had.
I agree. Yes. Yeah. You're totally right.
So
I don't care about Rogel Zar, so that was my biggest problem with that. I was like, man, just let it go.
Yeah.
No one likes him but you.
Yeah, I wasn't that thrilled to see Rogel Zar either. And the sad thing was he was more menacing than Mordru, so there you got a problem there, Bendis. And I have a feeling it's not going to get fixed.
Oh, no, because it's ending, at least temporarily, next issue.
Yeah,
that's
true. This story
that has done nothing, Drew. This whole freaking time is about to end. And what has it done? What has it done? It's reintroduced Rogelzar. Woo!
And a bad Mordru. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. The Flash, number 766. Desmond convinced Barry that the only way to stop all the Dr. Alchemy personalities is to recreate the Philosopher's Stone. And when Barry yields the Philosopher's Stone, Desmond states that he can take control of Barry. But Barry uses his knowledge of chemistry and his speed to turn Dr. Alchemy into stone. Then he puts him in Iron Heights. 1 week later, Barry is out front of a jewelry store, and it makes the readers wonder, is he contemplating marriage? And this is where I had the other issue. It was like, to be continued in endless winter. I'm like, there's no cliffhanger here. Why is this to be continued?
Because the Flash is also in it.
I know. But why would we end this with to be continued? There was nothing to continue. The story was wrapped. See, this is another... This shows DC trying to, you know, force the book to put in a plug for Endless Winter, even though your story was wrapped.
And we also both expect that story to be garbage. So, last I checked, at least. I mean, maybe your opinion's changed, but I have extremely low expectations for that book.
Yeah, I don't have high expectations for it either. But I'll try to reserve judgment till next week when we rip on it. But what'd you think of this Flash story? Just okay?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what it's been the entire time, which is okay.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine.
I thought it was interesting because I know I had talked about this, that it seemed like maybe this was going to end with a proposal because it was so focused on rings. And they even found a way to bring in a Green Lantern to ring with that.
I thought that was funny too.
A little bit like it was getting a little too on the nose. And it was just like, okay, I get it. He's got a ring. But I thought that made it seemed like the comic knew that and was like, ah, let's have him go in front of a ring store for no reason. Ultimately, no reason. That conversation served no purpose.
He was almost arguing with the jewelry guy that, no, I don't need a ring.
Yeah, well, but in that case, like, that's fine, but then what's the point? Well, what's the point of that, Drew? I don't need to be introduced to the concept that maybe him and Iris will get married at some point. I'm pretty familiar with that, as are, I think, every other Flash fan that exists.
Yes. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Wonder Woman number 767. The issue opens up years ago at Maxwell Lord's father's funeral. His father committed suicide, and his mother seems cruel. In the present, Wonder Woman's eyesight returns, and Count Vertigo has been defeated. Wonder Woman finds Emma tied up in the castle, and when Wonder Woman goes to free Emma, she starts to choke Wonder Woman. But Emma is just an illusion. Maxwell Lord is using Count Vertigo's equipment to enhance his powers, and we see that Wonder Woman is choking herself. Maxwell Lord orders Wonder Woman to pick up her sword and stab herself, and Wonder Woman gives herself a minor wound, then fights back against Maxwell Lord's mind control. And when Maxwell Lord goes to jail, Liar Liar is waiting in a prison cell for him and stabs him. And she's wearing some sort of pink glowing armor that I was very curious what that was about. We're seeing something different with her powers compared to Maxwell Lord's. That's what I was wondering, because I was going to ask you about that.
That's what it certainly seems to suggest, that she was somehow able to manifest her mental powers physically with that, which would obviously be significantly different from Max.
Yeah, and of course it said Liar Liar was supposed to return next issue, so I was I'm curious what her new abilities are going to be. And is this the end of Maxwell Lord? I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was surprised they're bringing Liar Liar back already. But maybe that storyline's going to carry on into the spring, because I can't It doesn't seem like something that should be wrapping up next issue. You know what I mean?
This story felt a lot to me like it got cut off by all of this, the Future State stuff, which is surprising to me. And I wonder if maybe they had this in the works earlier and that it was more affected by COVID than we would have realized. Like it was supposed to be starting earlier, so they would have had more issues to go with. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case, but that's what it feels like to me, because I actually thought the conflict between Max and Diana was pretty good. It's way too soon. It didn't have enough. There wasn't enough happening before that for the payoff to feel worth it. Like, we got that flashback to Max's dad's funeral, and that didn't really mean anything to me because we had done nothing with that. And I don't think we're going to see anything with that in the next issue. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It's one of those things that felt like that was – we were supposed to have seen more, and I think it would have worked a lot better had we gotten more. As it was, I mean, it was still – like I said, I thought that the final confrontation was pretty good. It didn't have a lot of impact because it just – not enough had happened to lead up to that point.
Yeah, and we discussed that last issue when Maxwell Lord did his turn. We were like, this feels a little too soon. Because I thought the Wonder Woman-Maxwell Lord partnership should have gone on longer before his turn. So you may be right. It may be because the Future State thing is why they cut this short.
And I also think the other problem, I also think that they relied maybe a little too heavily on past knowledge, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
For it to really mean anything, you needed to read the old Wonder Woman Maxwell Lord stories, and that history would be there if you read those. But that's, to me, that wasn't enough. I think we needed more in this timeline, this story.
Yeah, for newer readers, definitely. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Multiverse Who Laughs Number 1. Scary stories to tell in the dark multiverse. Robin King tells his groblins about a Superman who was a baby, passes through a cosmic radiation storm, and grows up to have a powerful hunger for burning human flesh. He also tells of a Flash who evolved into a victorious predator speed monster. John Stewart, who becomes a fearful dictator. Aquaman, who's mostly fish, and a Lois Lane who demolishes the heroes. In the second story, we get Zaz being taken to Arkham, but it's a whole different level of crazy as he ends up getting fed to Charlie Brown, also known as Kite Man. Crypto returns to Earth to find the super pets have gone crazy and killed most of the people on the planet. We also see a story where Green Lantern has taken over the Earth as a dictatorship, and Green Arrow is fighting against Hal Jordan's tyranny. Then we get a story. The Fear Index was an interesting story that focused on a world that was covered in Scarecrow's fear toxin. And we see that John Henry Irons rescues Jean-Paul Valley, and they were together to try and find a cure. When I got this issue, I was not expecting all these different short stories in it. And they were okay. I think I liked the Super Pets one the best, but ultimately, I didn't have to read this issue to be following Death Metal.
I cannot emphasize enough for people who are not buying everything for this event, please do not get this book. It is an incredible waste of your time. Some of the stories are fine. The Fear Index one's interesting, but then it just stops. Like, before they do anything really particularly interesting with that story, it ends. The Green Arrow one ultimately really isn't – I mean, they basically just rehashed Parallax with that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's a different story this time. But they basically just did Parallax but slightly different. This was a huge waste of time. I was honestly insulted after I finished reading this comic. I was like, what the hell? What the hell was this? None of these stories meant anything in terms of Death Metal. They were just basically just like, oh, but what if DC had no rules? Like, they don't. What are you talking about? You can tell these stories anyway if you want to. You just pitch them as another world story. Like that happens all. There's literally used to be a line called Elseworlds. These are Elseworld stories that you're telling.
Yeah, don't, basically.
don't sit here and act like Elseworld stories weren't like some of the stories that we just read in this. That's garbage. And so it's just, they're fine. None of these stories are necessarily bad. It was just, it's a waste of time. It has nothing to do with death metal. So if you're reading it because you want to make sure that you're not missing important information, which, again, they have gone, I think, overboard in putting important information into the tie-in titles. So I understand that thought, but it is not this book. Do not buy this book.
And I second that. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman White Knight presents Harley Quinn number 2. Harley Quinn confronts the Neo Joker at one of the Joker's old hideouts. They fight, but then a tea kettle whistles and interrupts them. They find common ground in tea. Both sit down and actually have a conversation, and Harley learns that the Neo Joker has no clue who James Turner is and did not try to recreate the Jason Todd crime scene. Instead, Neo Joker makes a deal with Harley. In exchange for information, Neo Joker wants a week to find a new hideout. Now, Neo Joker tells Harley that a while ago she was contacted by a guy that called himself the producer, and he wanted Neo Joker to work for him as his next starlet. Suddenly, Poison Ivy and the Mad Hatter show up, and we find out that Poison Ivy and Neo Joker are in a relationship. We also get more flashback to Harley's life with Jack Napier. We see Harley trying to get through medical school, and we see what's happening with Jack's mental state as he slowly becomes the Joker. Renee Montoya shows up at the park and talks to Harley. Renee is not too thrilled with the deal Harley has made with the Neo Joker, but still allows her to be on the GTO. She assigned Harley to work with Quimby, who seems to have an obsession with the Joker. And I was kind of curious when I read that scene, could Quimby be the producer? Or is that a little too obvious?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
And then at the end of the issue, we find out that the actor that played the Grey Ghost is attacked by Starlet. This was a really good second issue. And, you know, when I was reading it and I found out that the Neo Joker wasn't behind stuff, I was thinking, this is just issue number 2. Of course we're not going to get that reveal yet. It would have been silly to think that they were already going to reveal that the Neo Joker was behind it. So I should have thought of that when I started reading this, and I didn't.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, we knew who the villains were in the both of the White Knight stories, and that didn't stop them from being good.
That's true. That's true.
I guess it depends on what kind of story we expected it to be, if we expected it to be a mystery or not. And I honestly wasn't anticipating it being that much of a mystery. It clearly is, and that's fine. I have no problem with that.
And
I wasn't crazy about the Harley versus Harley scene. That felt odd. I don't know. It just didn't. It felt like a big tonal shift. I thought tonally the first book matched White Knight really well, and this book felt a little like. I wonder if the writer of this one had a little more freedom in this issue. Because their writing personality kind of showed more in this. Again, which is fine. I mean, it's your own book. To me, it didn't quite fit the same tone as the first issue did.
Okay. I liked it, so.
I still liked it. Don't get me wrong. I did not dislike this book. I was less enthusiastic about it as I was the first one, if that makes sense. Like, I still very much enjoyed it. It didn't hit all the same notes for me that I was expecting to, but I'm still very interested in the mystery that they've kind of put forth. I think that's one of the things, is I wasn't expecting this to be a mystery book. I thought it was, you know, going to be a little bit more straightforward of a story, and I'm totally cool with that. I have no problem.
All right, and maybe that's why it didn't feel quite the same to you then. I guess I got into the mystery. I love mystery, so.
Well, it wasn't that. Honestly, the thing that brought me out of it was the tea thing. It was funny. Don't get me wrong. It was a funny interaction between the two, but it was like, what?
Yeah. I have to agree with you, because it was a little jarring.
It was jarring just in regards to that was the thing that did not fit tonally with every other White Knight thing that we've read, including issue one, and honestly the rest of this issue. It felt out of place. Again, not that White Knight didn't have funny moments, or not that this book can't have funny moments, but it felt like a joke, if that makes, like, it was just like, ah, they're gonna fight, actually, and then like, ah, just kidding, they like tea. I was like, what? I didn't need. I'm fine that Neo Joker's not the villain. That's fine. I didn't need her to be the bad guy. I don't care about that. It was just, I thought they could have found a less. Wait, our mom's names are both Martha?
It did feel like that kind of moment, didn't it?
It did. It was so dumb. It was like, what's the dumbest possible thing that we can have to get them to stop fighting? Oh, the tea kettle goes off. What? Why not have, like, maybe don't have them go in and fight in the first place and just have them talk it out? Okay. Or have them fight and have them get to a stalemate? Because that was the other thing. We didn't reach, like, a physical stalemate between the two.
No, the whistle just interrupted the fight, and then they were like, basically, like, why are we fighting?
I will have to admit, Drew, that's really the thing that threw me off. Everything else about the book fit, I thought, the first issue. It threw me off so much. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
What is this book?
It did jar me out of it a little bit, too, but I got right back into it then when they started talking, so.
And again, I agree. I'm very interested in what apparently is turning out to be a mystery, and I'm curious to find out who this producer is. Is it the detective or doctor that she's working with? You know, is it somebody else? Very curious to find out more.
I am too. All right, well, let's move on to our last issue for this week, The Other History of the DC Universe number 1. I found it very interesting to see the DC Universe through Jefferson Pierce's eyes. The issue opens up telling us that more than any other thing in his life, Jefferson Pierce wanted to be superhuman. And we learn how Jefferson spent a lot of his youth running away from bad situations and studying in school to be the best version of himself. Now we see that Jefferson lost his reporter father when someone from the 100 shot him in the back of the head. And later on in the issue, I was surprised to learn it was Peter Gamby, the tailor who would later give Black Lightning his suit. Now, I don't know the Black Lightning's comic history, so I didn't know if that was what his history was, Peter killing his father or not. I'm just used to the television show version of Black Lightning. It's not a character I'm familiar with, because I never read Black Lightning, or I never read Batman the Outsiders when I was younger, so I'm unfamiliar with Black Lightning's comic history. We learn that Jefferson trained for and competed in the 1972 Olympics. He won a gold medal, but later on learned that the victory was empty for him. If he couldn't save lives, what was the point? We see that Jefferson traveled from place to place, taking jobs as teacher and a coach, and he eventually met Lynn, married her, and had a kid. And Jefferson and Lynn eventually move back to Suicide Slum, where he eventually becomes Black Lightning. One of the things I found really interesting in his view was his views on the other superheroes, especially Superman. He saw Superman as white privilege with a superiority complex. And Superman even coming to him once and giving him a lecture. Now, the other hero that Black Lightning seemed to have an issue with was John Stewart. And Jefferson saw John Stewart as a substitute or backup Green Lantern. And he had the perception of being a fill-in. Black Lightning saw him as an appeaser. Appeaser at a distance, but arrogant up close. Later on, Jefferson learns that John Stewart destroyed a whole planet. And one of the outsiders suggests that Jefferson reach out to him. And when Jefferson gets to know John, he gets his whole perception of him changes, and they become good friends. And we see how Jefferson loses his family when Lynn and the girls move out, but he gains a whole new family when he joins the Outsiders. And when the Outsiders eventually break up and go their separate ways, Jefferson feels really alone again. I tried to sum this up the best I could, but the comic itself was much better. What I could sum it up in. I thought it really gave us a good view of Jefferson Pierce's life and how his, you could see his point of views towards how he felt towards the other heroes and people in general. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was a really, really good walkthrough of Black Lightning's history. Now, I will admit, I'm the same as you, Drew. I have not read a ton of his stuff, so I don't know how closely we were following his history, but it feels pretty close, especially based on all the other stuff we got. I strongly suspect that that followed his character's history pretty closely. I could be wrong. I will admit I could be wrong on that, but that's given the accuracy of the other stuff, like where they're setting it with what was going on in DC stories elsewhere, that seems to line up right. This was really good. My only real nitpick with it was that it felt like it just sort of ended. I don't know if you got, like, it just sort of, like, and it's over.
But I don't think this is the only one they're doing. I think this, I remember saying it showed Black Lightning from 1972 to a certain date. It was like 95 or something. I don't think this is the end. I think we're getting another issue. But it did, you're right, it ended abruptly. I was like,
well, it ended on that's the thing. It ended on a cliffhanger, and I was like, well, that's odd, because I was thinking it was a one-shot that I was reading, and I was like, well, that's a weird way to end that. But if it's just the part one, then that makes sense, and I'm totally on board with part two. That was really my only complaint, was like the ending. I was reading it as a one-shot, and as an ending to a one-shot, it was not good. as the ending to part one, sure, yeah, that's very good. I really enjoyed it, and I loved honestly, I thought what read is a very accurate, what a lot of, I think somebody in Black Lightning's position would feel seeing somebody like John. So John Stewart gets this, and this is how John Stewart was portrayed, right? He becomes the next Green Lantern, but like Black Lightning says, like, they go out of their way to make sure that you know that he's the backup, that he's not the real Green Lantern. That's Hal, the white guy. The backup's John Stewart. And I personally think that that's how he was written. I'm sure some of the writers didn't want that to be how his character came off, but, you know, Hal was still clearly the most important Green Lantern, even when John Stewart had a ring. And so it did. It feels like appeasement, because, let's be honest, it was. Because if it wasn't, he gets his own book. And so I like that Black Lightning is like, yeah, I mean, sure, it's nice, but, like, he's not really what we... It's not the same as having a Superman. And so I like that. And I like getting the... Superman, as great as Superman is, he's never going to understand Jefferson Pierce's life. You know what I mean? Like, he's never had to live that life.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And so I love that the comic wasn't afraid to show a flaw in Superman that was it was an understandable flaw, if that makes sense. I think sometimes, you can miswrite Superman when you go out of your way to have him act irrationally dumb or, you know, overly angry. That's, I think, where you miss Superman and what his character is. But this, I thought, I totally buy. Like, he's not going to know that kind of life that Jefferson Pierce is in. I mean, yes, he's an alien, and yes, he didn't, for a while, he never had anybody else he thought of his race left, but he was still, he's effectively a white man, right? He's brought up, he's the most powerful being in the world. Like, he's never been in a situation where he would feel powerless in the same way that not just Jefferson Pierce, but a lot of black people in America. So, I don't know. I thought this was a very, very good comic, and if the Black Lightning show has piqued your interest in the character and you don't necessarily want to read a ton of old comics, this is, I think, a really good alternative where you get a nice concise history of the character while still really digging into, you know, who he is and how he thinks.
Yeah, this is really good. I mean, when I start reading, I'm like, man, there was a lot of writing in this. It was obvious that the writer was a novelist too. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, it. I will say it is not. I would struggle to call it a true comic. I would honestly classify it more as an illustrated book, in my opinion. But it's so well written.
Yeah, it is.
I still recommend reading it. I would, like I said, it's borderline whether I would actually classify it as a comic, but it's still worth reading.
It is definitely worth reading. And I'm excited to read the second issue because I want to learn where Black Lightning is going to go from where we left him off. So
I know that's the great thing in a sense, like for you and I, even though we've read a lot of comics, we haven't read him. So in theory, I should know exactly where it's going. And it, like we know his kids will pop up. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know a lot about his character's history.
I don't either. And that's kind of refreshing. We're getting something new. And especially since we've been, you know, reviewing the show and watching it. So it's been interesting to see the parallels from the comic book with the show, too. So they seem to be pulling a lot of his history into the show. So, all right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk Watchmen.
What is the Rusted Robot Podcast? Hey there, this is Sean.
This is Josh.
And this is Kitty.
We're your weekly geekly pop culture news. We talk about comic books.
Movies.
Anime.
Celebrity deaths.
Collectibles.
Toys.
Movie news.
Upcoming trailers.
And so much more. Check us out on the ESO Network and everywhere podcasts are found. Your nerdy news specialist, the Rusted Robot Podcast.
And we're back. Let's talk Watchmen, Season 1, Episode 9, See How They Fly. The episode opens up on November 1st, 1985, with Adrian Viet filming his message to President Robert Redford, telling him of his plan to save the world. And while the filming is going on, a cleaning woman makes her way into Adrian's office where she steals vial 2346 of his sperm and injects it into her vagina. In 2008, Lady True comes to Adrian Vite Antarctica compound. She reveals that she is his daughter. She states that his plan to save off nuclear holocaust is a rerun. She has an idea to make every nuclear device on the planet disappear. And she has found Dr. Manhattan on Europa. She plans to destroy him and take his power to fix the world. And she has already designed a quantum centrifuge to absorb his energy and transfer it into herself. Her only problem is she needs $42 billion to do it. Now, Adrian refuses her and tells her the story of how he inherited his money and he gave it all away and started out with nothing. And that's what he expects her to do. Then he tells her that he will never call her daughter. On Europa, we see a spaceship land, and Adrian has already tunneled his way out of prison. He fights the game warden, who he had created to be his adversary, as we find out. Adrian leaves on that ship that was sent by his daughter, and his daughter turns him into a statue that we see in her garden later on. So that was actually Adrian Vite. I was surprised to find that out. Now, in the present, we see that Lady True revives Adrian Fight so we can witness her plan and prove that she started from nothing to make it happen. Also, she makes a point to tell Adrian that he had to humble himself when he wrote the message, "Save me, daughter." We see that Lori is captured by the 7th Cavalry. Looking Glass shows up in a disguise wearing a Rorschach mask to rescue her. We see that Dr. Manhattan gets teleported into a cage where the 7th Cavalry can contain him. The senator explains how they learned about Dr. Manhattan and how Judd Crawford got close to the family. Now, when the senator goes into the chamber to get Manhattan's power, Lady True shows up. She takes the 7th Cavalry's guns with powerful magnetics. And Lady True says in exchange for Dr. Manhattan, William Reeves will finally get the justice against Cyclops. Now, when the chamber doors open, we get this big pile of gooey blood that pours out. Lady True zaps the 7th Cavalry leaders, and then Lady True begins the process of destroying Dr. Manhattan. But we see Manhattan is able to zap Adrian, Lori, and Looking Glass to Adrian's office in Antarctica. And Manhattan keeps Angela near him because he doesn't want to be alone when he dies. Adrian freezes his squids and rains them down on Tulsa. and he uses them to destroy Lady True's machine. Angela is able to get away to safety, and she runs into a theater, the theater her grandfather is at with the kids. Angela learns that it was Dr. Manhattan's idea that William make the deal with Lady True in the first place. We also get one of the best lines in this episode from Looking Glass. That guy talks too much. As he hit Adrian Veidt over the head with a wrench because Lori decides to arrest him. And we see the episode ends with Angela finding an unbroken egg in the carton that she threw on the floor when the 7th Galvary attacked last episode. And Angela eats that egg and walks on water. This was a great wrap-up to this series. And like you told me, it wrapped up all the loose ends. And it was funny how this ended up being all Dr. Manhattan's idea because of how he lives time all at the same time. He started and finished this.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you could argue that he maybe could have avoided this. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like he could have done stuff to prevent his capture or demise, but instead, it's interesting. It's an interesting look into his psyche, right? Because instead of necessarily trying to stop that, because he just kind of accepts that everything that happens just happens, he instead is trying to affect everything else around that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know, like, what you,
like,
mean.
He sees that he's supposed to die there, so he's like, okay, but what's the, like, most beneficial way, in a sense, that I could die? It's really, I don't know, I found that fascinating.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And how Adrian Veidt was pulled back into the story, that was pretty good, too.
Yeah, and then, of course, realizing that he'd been in the present the whole time as a statue. Like, we had literally seen him there, and we just didn't really take, you know, you don't really even think about it. You're like, yeah, of course he's got a statue.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that just makes sense. Lady True being his daughter, that made a whole lot of sense. You know, how she was portrayed. She was the villain of this story. We didn't really know it till the end. Not really. But she had the same ideals as Adrian Veidt did, too. She wanted to save the world and
would have and ultimately ended up killing, just like Adrian, would have killed millions of people in the process.
Yeah.
That theoretically, you avoid one catastrophe, but in order to do that, you cause a different, maybe slightly smaller catastrophe. Yeah. And I found it interesting that Adrian himself recognizes that, right? He knows. He's done it himself.
Yeah.
He knows what that could happen. So he, yeah.
He knows. And what's funny is he still thinks he's the hero at the end of this.
Of course. I mean, because he's still the same megalomaniac he was.
Yeah. Really, really good series. Highly recommend this series.
So good. And just and I know we like we've been talking about the way it just everything pays off. Even the smallest stuff, you know, seeing a statue of Adrian Veidt, the little tiny squid stuff isn't just like a little tiny quirk that they put in there. Like all of that stuff ends up mattering. It's just the story just ties into itself and ties up so well. And then to get the payoff at the end with Angela highly suggested that she's essentially the next Dr. Manhattan is fascinating.
Yeah. I could see why they only wanted to do one season of this, but they could do another story set in this universe. I don't know if they could be as good, though.
I think the problem is that I agree with you. It's incredibly interesting. I'd love to see that story, but for it to be truly, in my opinion, a Watchmen story, it has to be a mystery. And what is the mystery in season 2?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, season 2 would essentially just be watch Angela be Dr. Manhattan, which is cool, but that's also not really Watchmen. That's when it just kind of becomes a superhero story.
Yeah. Really good. I really enjoyed this series.
I mean, yeah. I'm so glad that this won all the awards that it did because it is a phenomenal TV show. Like I said, it's incredible. Just on its own right, the story that it's able to tell is so good. But then the fact that they were able to do this within the Watchmen world, and it, to me personally, doesn't feel like it's stepping on the toes of Alan Moore at all. It really feels like it respects that comic and respects that story but then still manages to tell its own story that fits that world without, in my opinion, it doesn't really change anything. It doesn't really force you to look at an event necessarily differently or in a way that Alan Moore didn't intend, if that makes sense. Like, it gives you different perspective on some characters, but I don't feel like anybody fundamentally changed. I don't feel like it, like I said, I really don't feel like it stepped on the toes of what Alan Moore did with his comic.
I don't think so either. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I was curious myself about the Peter Gambie. So we were talking with the Black Lightning story with the Peter Gambie thing. I was like, when I read that in the alternate history, I was like, oh, that would make sense for the show to change that slightly because that's pretty irredeemable.
Yeah.
To have killed the dad. And I was like, ah, oh, but that makes sense. Like, if you want to include that character, they found a clever way to update the betrayal. If you're curious to read the original, though, Black Lightning Volume 1, so the original run of Black Lightning, Issue 7, is where you get that story. So the little, like, we get that kind of hint and tease of that story in the alternate history. That original story takes place in Black Lightning number 7. Came out in 1978, Drew.
1978, wow. Quite a while ago. I think I was 5. And you probably weren't even born yet.
I was negative 13.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, because recently he had an episode where he had a Justice League reunion with the cast from the Justice League, the voiceover actors. And I'm not completely done listening to it yet, but I'm finding it really interesting. So check that out. If you'd like to shout about, or if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman, Far Sector, Strange Adventures, Batman Catwoman number 1, which I'm very excited about, and of course, Justice League Endless Winter number 1. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.